create a more just medical system. To learn more or to get involved, visit us at radioproject.org.
We fear we will be left to die if the price is set too high. How dearly we have paid for you, vaccine. Let's put to use these public funds and set that virus on the run. You know the one I mean, COVID-19.
And that's it for today's show. Special thanks to the People's Vaccine Alliance for use of their sound at the top of the show. The Making Contact team includes Anita Johnson, Monica Lopez, Sabine Blazin, Jessica Partnow, and I'm Salima Hamarani. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Portland. Before we start our show, I want to remind you that today's a great time to become a member of KBOO. Show your support for Transpositive and for KBOO by becoming a member of KBOO today. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Help us meet our $15,000 goal. We're community funded, so we need your support to get there. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thank you. Good evening. You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight, we're going to be talking about current events. We have Genoa Knight here to tell us about the case of Nikki, who's a missing transgender woman here in the Portland area. We're going to be hearing some more about Nikki and her recent disappearance. Nicolette's also got some trans news in Texas and in Florida with anti-trans attacks, specifically on children by the legislature and by the governor. And we'll also be getting into we'll be talking about the Biden State of the Union speech. So a lot of current news this week here on Transpositive. My name is Emma. I use she and her pronouns. Let's all go around and introduce ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I'm Nicolette, and I use AM or they, them pronouns.
Hi, I'm Sheila, and she, her is fine with me.
Thank you. And Chinoa, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Chinoa. I use she, her pronouns.
Great, thanks. So, Shanoa, let's start with you tonight. Can you tell us what's going on? So, I know that like it's been a couple of weeks now, but Nikki, a friend of yours who's transgender, has gone missing, and there's been a lot of news about it. Can you tell us what's going on?
Sure, Nikki, Nicola de Calderon, also last name Kavanaugh. She's 42. Walked away from her mother's home located near East Lolo Pass Road in East Village Loop near Zigzag on Mount Hood at about 5 p.m. last Saturday, February 26th, just over a week ago. Nikki is a white transgender female, approximately 5 feet, 10 inches, and weighs about 130 pounds. She has shoulder length, pinkish blonde hair, blue gray eyes. She may be wearing yoga clothes. Nikki grew up in Woodburn and moved to Portland when she was 17. She has deep connections in our dance and yoga communities. Nikki was diagnosed with a brain aneurysm, which officials say might be causing her some cognitive impairment. If you have information, please call 911 or Clackamas County Sheriff Deputy Nelson at 503-655-8211. The missing person case number is 22-004860. Yeah, I saw her the day before she went missing, and yeah, it's just a big surprise. So any leads, anyone who may have seen her, she's, you know, quite striking and beautiful, and I feel like she, you know, people searched her, any spot she's hung out at. But her partner, Leo, seems to think wherever she might be, she would probably go to yoga. So he was like very insistent that try to keep in the yoga community or dance communities to see if anyone has seen her.
So she was last seen up by Zigzag. Is there a chance that she wandered off into the mountains somewhere?
Right. Yeah. She is a mushroom hunter. So she, according to Leo, could survive on a lighter. You know, she is, knows that area pretty well. And so they searched last Saturday in parts, and it's, I guess, duck hunting season right now, but there were a lot of people up there, and they asked people, they've been posting signs up there and all around town here, but, he specifically knew where she might hide or might find a place. You know, it was a stressful week last week, so he thought she might wander off and try to hide for some reason, but I don't know, there's just so many possibilities that we're just trying to stay open-minded about, you know, where she could be.
Yeah, well, this is really important. I mean, a lot of trans people go missing every year, and so it's really great. Thanks so much for coming on the show to talk. Can you tell us a little about Nikki? Like, you know, just some personal connections that you had with Nikki?
Yeah, I've known Nikki for a couple of years now. We've been doing yoga at Core Power Yoga here in Portland. And so I'd see her weekly. We became close through teacher training. And if you look for her on Facebook or Instagram, she has some beautiful, she was a part of a documentary, I think, about her dancing and her life. So she's just got a really extraordinary life and spirit. So I know people are pretty affected by this. So,
and she's a dancer too?
Yes. Ballet, different kinds of dance. And I don't know. She was dancing. I'm not quite sure who she danced with, but you could just tell by the way she moved that she, you know, really was thoughtful about being in her body and the way she would move it. Really perfectionist, disciplined. So try to find her on Facebook or Instagram, Nikki.
How do you spell her name, Chanel? How would you spell her name?
Sure. She, I think on Instagram, goes by N-I-Q-I. And the full name is N-I-Q-O-L-A. And then D-E space Calderon, C-A-L. D-E-R-O-N.
Also, so Nicola, Nicola, yeah. De Calderon. Okay.
Yes, great. Yes.
And yeah. and her partner, he's really worried about it. He's really, really worried about her too.
And he's been searching every day and any place that they would, because they've been together about 15 years, I think.
Wow. So
he knew her pretty well, like where she might go.
Yeah, but she, is there like any signs of foul play, anything to be concerned about? Do you think this is just a missing persons case? Maybe just was having some cognitive issues because of her brain aneurysm, or is this any idea?
I think there's so many possibilities. Like, you know, you worry about her getting in a car to hitchhike. You worry about her wandering off and hitting her head or something, or having a full brain aneurysm or something. I guess I would think she would need to take meds and would need to get near someone to help get those medications too. You know, and if she wasn't getting them, how that would affect her. So just lots of possibilities. And I don't know her family that well, but you know, she would stay with them. So I know she trusted her family. But like I said, she was a mushroom hunter, so she knew how to be outside too, you know. Yeah.
And it sounds like she's a very positive person, like she makes friends easily.
Yes, very engaging, very you know, like spiritual way, that like she was connected to nature and you know, just a really cool person.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and also I think I saw she was also a musician too.
Yeah, very talented in many ways. So I know she's got deep roots here in Portland, and many people every day more and more people ask me, you know, that say they know her and want to help some way.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully she's just lost and she'll turn up. So can you read that to us one more time? The wanted missing information about Nicola, because that way we'll get that in one more time.
Yes. If you have information, to call 911 or Clackamas County Sheriff Deputy Nelson at 503-655-8211. The missing person case is 22-004860. And if you plug that number into Google, it'll bring you right to her picture and information. So you could use that to help find the spelling of her name, to help find her on Instagram and Facebook, Nicola de Calderon.
Okay, great. So it's Nicola de Calderon. And just for our listeners, if they happen to see her, you said she's about 5'10". You said she weighs about 130?
Yeah, yes. Very, okay. You know, strong body. Just, I think, muscle and bone.
Like a dancer's body, right? Yes,
long
right,
and
a dancer's lean body. She's 42. And she was last seen wearing yoga gear.
Yeah, yes. And she didn't really have much with her. So I don't, her mom went to go, I think, do something, and Nikki left while she was distracted. So she was on, doesn't have a, I don't think she had access to a car. She didn't have her license and stuff, because that was all found somewhere else before she went missing. So it's just hard to know. It's hard to know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you said, hopefully she's just hiding in someone's house and doesn't have access to a phone, and she'll show up soon.
Okay, yeah, let's hope for the best.
Yeah.
Well, Chinua, thank you so much for joining us on Transpositive. You're welcome to stay around for the conversation, or if you want to go, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, and I love that. So welcoming. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's go on to, so Nicolette, we were going to have you next talking about some stuff you've been doing some research about.
Earlier this month, trans competitive swimmers Leah Thomas and Isaac Hennig competed head-to-head in an NCAA college swimming competition, which is, I think, the first time two trans swimmers have competed against each other in this type of competition. So it was Hennig, who is a trans man, beat Thomas, who's a trans woman, by 2 seconds in the race. And I'd like to add that that's noteworthy, because there's a huge misconception that AMAB people assigned male at birth are always stronger and faster than AFAB people assigned female at birth, which is why there's so much objection to trans women being allowed to compete in women's sports.
But here we had an AFAB trans person beat an AMAB trans person in a competition.
Exactly. Yeah. What do you think about all of the, so like the criticism about Leah has been that like Leah like did so much better in the swimming meets than like her nearest competitors, like by a significant factor. Do you think that that should be taken into account?
I mean, it could just be that she's a better swimmer, honestly. I understand why there's some controversy about that. It's the same reasons that have always been, why trans people in competing in sports has always been controversial, but it's really just transphobia. I mean, just because she's AMAB doesn't automatically make her stronger and faster.
Right. Yeah, because we've definitely talked about this show on the show like two or three times. We did that like trans youth in sports. We did a couple of those shows and talked about that a lot. I mean, this is still in the news. It's apparently a big deal. And I think this is really kind of what I learned from our two trans youth in sports shows. For the most part, most transgender performers, I mean, most transgender athletes are going to be competing at pretty ordinary levels, you know? And it's what this is really about is we need to make sure that people are able to be included and to feel welcomed, because transgender people get so much negating. They have so many experiences in which they're excluded and made to feel like they're not really welcomed. And participation in sports is a great way of making people feel included and welcomed. And the main focus of trans youth in sports and even trans collegiate athletes in sports should really be about making sure that everyone feels welcome, included in their sports. But at the really elite level.
And I do, I understand that and I agree. I know for the Olympics, in order to compete in the women's division, they do hormone testing, and so if you're trans, you have to be on hormone therapy, and I think it's like you have to be on HRT for 2 years or something like that, and they will test to see what your testosterone levels are at. But it also raises complications for, like, there's been intersex people who didn't really know which division to compete in because their testosterone level was too high to compete in women's, but at the same time they don't really fit in the men's division either. And so yeah. I do think that there's some adjustments that need to be made, but I do understand where people are coming from when they just want it to be fair. I just think that we do need to include trans people and make trans people feel as welcome as possible in athletics if they want to compete.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And like, we need to fight back against any, any attacks on trans athletes. Because that's really like, they're like using Leah basically participating in women's sports, which she has every right to do, as like this great excuse to just totally bash all transgender people.
If somebody wants to compete, it shouldn't matter if they're trans. We have just as much right to compete as anyone else.
Exactly. Yeah, totally.
It almost feels like, because of transphobia, because of this transphobia ingrained in our culture, trans people aren't allowed to do well in the public's eyes. Well, if you want, we can move on to a story about another trans person doing very well. Also earlier this month, Michaela J. Rodriguez from the TV show Pose just became the first trans actress to win a Golden Globe Award. Yeah, she won the award for Best Television Actress in a Drama Series for her role in Pose. And this was also the show's first Golden Globe, too. All I know is she's a trans actress and she's in the show Pose. I don't know much about the show. I've never seen it. But it is a very... I know it's a very LGBT-centric show, like with a lot of LGBT characters. And so... this trans actress, I guess, plays a trans character on the show. I don't know exactly who she plays. But yeah, she apparently just won a Golden Globe for her role in that show.
Wow, that's so exciting. You know, it's so important for trans people in, you know, in Hollywood to really be represented by trans people. Like,
one reason that we need more trans actors in these roles is because there are so many trans actors and actresses and non-binary actors and so forth that are just not getting a whole lot of roles, and they, you know, they need that representation, they need that exposure. And then I think it's also important to keep in mind that when we have, like, say, cis men playing trans women or cis women playing trans men, it kind of reinforces this stigma, this idea that trans women are really men and trans men are really women, and that's not the case. And that's why, you know, I even prefer cis women playing trans women or vice versa over, you know, a cis person of the opposite sex. But really what we need is trans women playing trans women, trans men playing trans men. I think that's the most authentic way to really portray those characters.
The first time I really felt comfortable, like, transitioning was when I was like 5 or 6 years old and I saw a trans character on television. And that helped me remember that, like, the way that I felt about myself and the way that I felt my body was, you know, it was legitimate. I mean, there was somebody on television who felt the same way. And, like, getting to see that was great. I actually went and looked it up. It was from the 1970s because I was really curious, like, if the person that I had seen on television actually was transgender. And she wasn't, but it was like 1976. So I guess that's just kind of how it was back then. But now it's so important, like, for youth and for people just coming out to really be able to see real trans people, you know, even if they're just playing fictional roles on television.
Exactly. And I think if I had, you know, had the opportunity to see non-binary characters or non-binary actors growing up, it might have helped me feel more comfortable coming out of the closet sooner. Because, you know, I grew up thinking maybe there was just no one else like me. And I felt very sort of alone because of that for the longest time. And it wasn't until my 20s that I found out that non-binary is a thing and there's other non-binary people in the world. In fact, quite a lot more than people realize. So I definitely wasn't alone. So that's why we really need representation. Trans and non-binary people need to know that they're not alone. And we're here, we exist, and we're just as normal as everyone else. So, speaking of trans actresses in television, I wanted to share about this new show I've been watching that just came out a couple weeks ago that has a trans actress as part of the cast. And I think her character is treated really well. There's this new show called Single Drunk Female. There's only 3 episodes out so far because it just came out a couple weeks ago. But in the second episode, there's a character played by trans actress JoJo Brown. And what I love about this, so what I love about how this character is portrayed is, at least so far in the show, nobody ever even mentions the fact that she's trans. Like, she's just a normal character who could just as easily be played by a cis woman and she'd still be exactly the same. And I love that because I really think we need more trans characters in TV and film who are just normalized and their transness isn't even a big deal. Like, it helps viewers hopefully begin to see trans people as more normal. They really should just see us as normal people. Like, this character in the show, she's just the main character's boss, you know, and she's just acting like any other woman, you know, and like, it's not even pointed out that she's trans. Nobody misgenders her or anything. She's just a woman, and it just so happens right. That woman is trans.
Yeah, and I mean, I think so. I can't really speak for, like, anybody's average experience because everybody has a different experience, but I can say that for myself, my normal day-to-day experience in life is just like, I don't go around and tell everybody, oh, hi, I'm transgender, my name is Emma, I'm transgender, hi, I'm transgender. I just go and do my normal thing, you know. I go and do my gardening and go to meetings and go to the store, and it's like I don't really talk about being transgender because, you know, most people don't talk about just random things about themselves when they're just going about their lives. I mean, that's something that they'll reveal to their friends, like, during personal moments. But it's like, you know, other than that, it really shouldn't be an issue.
Exactly. I mean, the fact that I'm non-binary doesn't normally come up in conversation unless, like, somebody misgenders me and I ask them to refer to me in a different manner. Other than that, like, it's not like it's a constant part of my everyday life, you know, it's just something that I am.
Exactly. But that's really great transcendent news. Thank you, Nicolette.
Hi, this is Emma with Transpositive. We're just taking a little break. I just want to remind you that it is our winter drive right now, and our on-air goal is $15,000. It's really important to me to support KBOO because KBOO is a source of non-corporate radio. It's a place where programmers who don't necessarily fit into the corporate model are able to find a voice. So if you can, please give to KBOO today. You can give by going to kboo.fm/give, or you can text KBOO to 44321. Thanks so much.
So I wanted to talk about this news article I recently found. The article itself is recent, but it's regarding something that happened almost 2 years ago. But, you know, it's important to talk about now because it is a current issue that needs to be addressed. So Danny France, a transgender teenager in England, took his own life in April of 2020 after falling into a, quote, service black hole while being transferred from the Suffolk Children and Adolescent Mental Health Services to the Cambridgeshire Adult Services, according to Danny's father. Danny had a history of self-harm and suicide attempts and had been referred by his doctor to the NHS Foundation Trust for mental health care, but was still waiting on an assessment by the adult locality team when he died. Danny had tried to refer himself for counseling, but was denied because he was considered too high risk. The area's first response service also assessed Danny, but decided he wasn't in need of urgent intervention. At the time, Danny was 17 and a half, so the Children's Mental Health Services didn't want to take on someone who would be turning 18 in 6 months, but the Adult Mental Health Services couldn't work with him until he turned 18, meaning that for 6 months, he was left with no way to get care, which can be deadly for people struggling with mental health issues, as it was in Danny's case. And Danny's father also noted that there were considerable delays in obtaining appointments for the gender identity clinic as well. So there's a lot of issues to discuss here, I think. You know, for one thing, it is important to talk about how being trans, especially as a youth, can have a huge impact on your mental health. And that's why gender dysphoria especially can cause a suicidal thoughts and depression, and that's why a lot of trans people have a high rate of suicide or high risk of suicide. But more importantly, you know, the way that society treats trans people, I think, is an even bigger contributing factor. So it's very important for it's important for people with mental health issues to get access to care, but also it's important for trans people to get access to mental health care, especially. And I think it's just baffling that this person was left with no way to get care. You know, they were told by one service that they were too high risk, which I would think if someone's high risk, shouldn't they get counseling? Shouldn't they get care? That just doesn't make sense to me. But then another place, you know, said that he wasn't in need of urgent intervention. Clearly he was, because he ended up taking his life. And I think that a lot needs to be done for our mental health system. It is really just tragic that, you know, the state of society, I think, is what's causing so many queer and trans people to struggle with mental health. And I think that makes it all the more important that we provide mental health care to queer and trans people, but also mm-hmm. especially to youth. You know, this was a youth. This was someone who was 17 and died way, way too soon in their life.
Yeah, totally. I mean, they could have had a full, they should have had a full life, a full rich life, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think there needs to be a huge mental health care reform if, you know, this, the children and adolescent services wouldn't take him on because he was going to be 18 soon. You can't just leave someone without mental health care for 6 months. All it takes is one day for someone to commit suicide.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
The article is just Danny's father speaking out about it, is talking about him, you know, raising awareness for these issues to try and make sure that this doesn't happen again in the future. So, you know, it's still something that's being talked about. That's why the article is recent, even though this death happened almost 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's absolutely something we need to raise awareness about. There needs to be a reform in the way mental health care is distributed.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
You know, that's actually a really good, like, kind of walk into, I think, what Sheila wanted. Like, Sheila, you've got a lot of stuff you want to talk about tonight. So if you could unmute yourself, Sheila, let's all have a conversation. Let's talk about what's going on right now with current events.
So just some of the things that strike me about the current times that we're going through with trans people. Well, first of all, there's obviously a legislative boon going on right now, and it's happening mostly around two issues. One is the question about athletic competition. The other is about teaching or mentioning trans or gay or lesbian topics. And then there is the question about integration of school sports and in terms of the locker room and bathroom issues. And the last is, and this hits even deeper, is to ask whether parents and caretakers are allowed by the state to give the people that are identifying or questioning transgender identification the help that they need. And mm-hmm. and each one of these oppositions is based upon both political expediency, because the narrative that they put out runs basically like this. They say that first of all, they go back to a faulty and naive biology that genetics is everything, and so they stick to a strict biological polarity, and they don't recognize intersex conditions because they never bring it up. If they did, they would make a special little codicil and qualify their generalizations, which they never do. So as far as they're concerned, there are these two absolutely discrete categories. And because of that, and then usually a religion plays its role that somehow or other God intervenes directly in the creation of every individual and literally has a life path set out for you in whatever gender that you've been assigned, and so that some way that you're varying from that is a rebellion against not just your birth sex, but is somehow a sense that you've completely varied from the plan that was in store for you. And if they felt that this only involved a handful of people, they wouldn't probably be as upset. But their theory is that transgender identification is growing and more people are reporting transgender feelings, and so they feel that in some ways this is a sort of like a burgeoning epidemic, and especially in of young biologically assigned at birth women transitioning to men in during their adolescence. And the thought is that this might be just dissatisfaction with the changes they're undergoing in puberty, or it could be just some sort of group identification of what one comes out this way. So it's kind of treating it as though it's a fad, like the hula hoop.
Yeah, right, like peer pressure.
Exactly. Then they go farther than that, though, because they say that, especially in elementary schools, they say you can't speak about these topics, because it'll take kids that have never questioned their identity and somehow create some gender problematic in people that otherwise would never think of being transgender if they were never exposed to it. And this kind of varies from what I, at least in the era that I came up in, was very clear that transgender adults were also transgender adolescents and were also transgender kids. And they the identification didn't start, some people would say to their earliest memories, some would say age 3 to 4, some would say 7 to 8. But in any case, it isn't something that popped out just out of the blue, and it certainly didn't pop out from just hearing about it. When I was a kid, there was transgender cartoons. Bugs Bunny was always in drag. And I remember as a child saying, oh my gosh, this is me, this is who I want to be. And so, you know, so I mean, now Bugs Bunny would be outlawed so the whole point is that it's based upon a kind of a hysterical knee-jerk reaction that somehow it's almost allied to the 50s where you saw communists popping out from behind every bush. The idea is that some nefarious plot is in play that is going to indoctrinate kids into transsexualism. Everybody's going to switch sexes, and then after that there won't be solid families, and after that, you know, basically America will have all its virility taken away, and before long the Russians will come and take us over. And of course it ignores all the real issues that are going on. And especially it ignores the pain that transgender kids are going through. And this is what we're talking about tonight, is how tragic this is in individuals. It's tough to go through adolescence under any circumstances, no matter what sex you are. And to have to go through it when your body isn't spontaneously giving you the things that everybody else in your desired gender is manifesting is grueling. And then if you watch your body going off in a completely other, it'd be like going down a freeway and being forced to take, you know, there's a bifurcation of the road, you know, go this way and you go to Portland, go this way, you go to Salem or something by that little airport exit. And somebody says, oh, I've felt this panic. I say, oh my gosh, I'm in the wrong lane. I'm going to have to go through Portland traffic. I wanted to bypass by the airport and have to do some quick lane changes. Well, this is what puberty is like for a transgender kid. All of a sudden, your body starts doing stuff to you, and most of us don't even see it coming. And when it does, but it's bad enough to just go through any puberty, but to go through the wrong puberty, grueling. And so the Texas law that says, oh, if a parent tries to do something about this and take an interest or try to save these poor kids, they are guilty of child abuse. And interpret existing law to somehow include that this is parents or teachers or counselors literally leading people astray instead of just facing the issue. And of course, there's never any research done. They never consult any of the data on any of this. It's always just, this is what we think, and this is the way it's got to be. And it always serves an ulterior purpose, which is basically to say transgender people are so powerful that they can have this big effect, forgetting that we don't have that many advocacy agencies, and if those that we have are not that well-funded, we're not in a position to take over America. It'd be like Rhode Island trying to conquer Texas. It can't be done.
So thank you. So some of the things you're referring to, let's just put some names to some of this. So in Texas, Governor Greg Abbott has instructed DHS the agency that like is responsible for child welfare and child endangerment, has instructed them to if people are concerned about if they see somebody giving advice to transgender kids, if they see school counselors giving advice or access to services to transgender kids, if they see parents supporting their transgender kids, they're instructed to be reported to Child Protective Services as child abusers. And that's the governor of Texas has instructed the agency to treat parents who support their transgender kids as child abusers. And this is specifically intended to go after trans kids to make them afraid of getting services, because it'll make them afraid of having their parents, who are their the people that support them and care for them, of going to jail or going to prison for supporting them. I mean, can you imagine? I can't use expletives on the air, so I can't say exactly what I'm thinking right now. But if you could just imagine something that just totally messes with your head in like the most cruel and insane way, that's exactly what this statement by the governor of Texas is intended to do.
Exactly. I mean, what's really child abuse is forcing your child to pretend to be something they're not and forcing them to live in pain, you know? So that's what they're really doing, is abusing these trans kids.
Exactly. I mean, in Florida, which is, I can't remember, who's the governor of Florida? Is it Rick DeSantis or is that? Well, anyways, whoever the governor of Florida is, in Florida, they just passed the Don't Say Gay law, which means that you can't talk about gay things. You can't tell students about it. So, like, you can't mention in school that, you know, gay people exist, or that there was, a human rights movement for gay people, or that gay people got equal marriage. Kids who are a lot of kids, by the time they're, you know, when they're young, they already know if they're queer, just like you were saying earlier, Sheila. But now there's this new law in Florida that instructs, you know, in public schools, you cannot teach kids about, you can't talk about it. So can you imagine how that would be in Florida if you were a teacher? Remember, Florida is the state that had the worst massacre of LGBTQ people in American history. So Florida is not some place that's like always safe for queer people. And this kind of law is going to create more hatred, and it's going to like help support people who really hate queer people. It's really dangerous. It's a slippery slope between Texas and Florida. This is a slippery slope. So anyways, and then Sheila, you also wanted to talk about the State of the Union speech, didn't you? How did you feel about it when President Biden specifically addressed the issue of transgender kids, supporting trans kids, in his State of the Union speech, didn't he?
I was delighted, and it was done in a very specific addressing trans youth also, and the president, it was near the end of many of the other very critical issues. And, you know, it's a common thing with public speaking to say that the last thing that you say, sometimes everything else gets forgotten except for the last thing. So it would have been very easy in the old days for a politician to even recognize her existence. But to actually take time to say that I've spoken to transgender kids and I promised them I've got your back, that was his phrase. And so I'm asking that we be aware of our transgender kids and our transgender issues and bring it up at a State of the Union speech. People from my generation would have said that we'll never see it. We'll never see a president willing to risk losing political capital, especially during a very critical time, excuse me, of his own presidency. Showed great courage and showed that he keeps his promises. Because if there was any promise that would have been easy to skip, this would have been the one. So I was, if I didn't already love him, I would have said this shows what a good man Joe Biden is.
Well, that's great. Yeah, that's some good news. I mean, to hear that the president. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There was one other thing on these legislations that I wanted to mention. One of them, I don't remember which one, actually had it as a mandatory thing that if a teacher inadvertently heard that one of his students was gay or transgender, that he had an obligation to out the child to the parents. And this could have been with, you know, you can just imagine a non-accepting home. And now they're saying, I could just picture the conversation. Oh, we got a call from your school today, and apparently you've been playing with the girls or mincing around the playing ground, and your teachers are deeply concerned, and we are too. And I want you to know, as your parent, that I'm not going to put up with this in my house kind of attitude. And I can just see it. I if anything would be a detriment or danger to an already fragile child, is to be outed by an authoritative body and to their own parents with no effort to understand whether that's even a friendly home. There's a lot of people that have some parents that would take that kind of news as the last straw, and this is why there's so many trans and gay kids out on the street, because they've been thrown out of their homes, you know, right, or given ultimatums that they can't possibly live up to.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, and we forgot about Iowa. Anybody want to talk about Iowa?
Well, Iowa was the and it's his Governor Kim signed it into law the other day. And Kim, I'm not sure of her last name, but she was the State of the Union speech. She was the speaker for the Republican side of the, like, you know, the kind of, oh, you've heard the Democrat, now you'll hear our view. And so, and she signed in one of these laws that said, well, we don't want transgender athletes competing. And it's always based on this assumption that transgender kids are going to dominate the girls' sports instead of, and they don't understand the whole purpose of high school sports is really camaraderie. It's supposed to be play. It's not supposed to be some training ground for big football teams or something.
In her response, and in the way that she described trans athletes, she couched it under the issue of safety for girls. So she said something like, now we know that girls in Iowa will be safe, you know, when they participate in sports, as if transgender kids are somehow sexual predators. And I remember hearing that in one of her responses. And that's what I thought was just especially offensive of all of the offensive things that she said about trans kids that day.
Absolutely.
Well, and where do they think that if they insist that the transgender, let's say, do they want this now young woman to have to go into the boys' locker room? And how is that going to come up? It's basically disqualifying them from sports per se.
Nicolette, what do you think about all this?
Yeah, it's really just shocking how there's so much legislation literally looking to abuse trans and LGBT kids. You know, it's, they claim it's for the safety of the children, but it's not. It's all about just forcing kids back into the closet, forcing kids to be abused, forcing kids to be in pain, and encouraging other kids to bully them and become bigots in the future. I mean, this is, you know, just addressing the Don't Say Gay law in Florida, the reason why we need to teach kids about LGBT issues from a young age is so that, one, kids who are already questioning, because we do question from a very young age, will get some answers and better understand what's going on with them. And two, so that, you know, kids who are cishet can learn to be better allies. But that's not what they want. They want to... they want to push these kids back in the closet, and they want to brand LGBT kids as predators. You know, I don't feel like any girls are safe right now. Trans girls are not safe.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, this is Emma from Trans Positive. We're just taking a little break in the show today to remind you that KBOO is a great radio station, and 80% of our funding comes from our members. We're 52 years old, and we're one of the oldest community radio stations in the country. KBOO is a real gem, and I hope that you will support KBOO right now during our winter drive. Our on-air goal is $15,000, and if you'd like to give to KBOO, just go to kboo.fm/give. We're community funded, so we need your help to get there. If you can, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thanks so much.
So they're not doing this for the sake of the kids. This has nothing to do with safety for kids. It's all about making the adults feel better about themselves and, you know, enforcing this bigotry, this bigoted agenda.
It is. It's hatred. They're using trans kids to help fuel their own political agendas. I mean, they're basically, you know, they've chosen somebody that they think people can hate, and that they can unite around hatred of trans kids. And that's exactly what they're doing. And it's just, it's completely reprehensible. I mean, the government is supposed to protect our children. Government is supposed to be there to support, nurture, to educate, to provide our kids with the best chances in life that we can. And what we're doing to trans kids is we're sending them into the closet. We're damaging them for life. We're sending this message that they're inferior, that they're less than, and that they don't deserve to have the opportunities in life that other kids get to have. And, you know, it's incredibly shameful. I mean, Iowa, Texas, Florida are just very, it's very shameful. And I'm surprised at Iowa. I have to be honest. I'm surprised that this was happening in Iowa. I'm from the Midwest, and you know, generally the Midwest is a pretty liberal place. I mean, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, they're generally pretty liberal places. I mean, there's some, you know, there's some edginess there, like, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, some parts of those states are very red, but it's just, it's really shocking to me that this is what the governor of Iowa was saying, especially. I mean, I think that she needs to be recalled from office, honestly, for her response to the State of Union address, really targeting trans kids. Can you imagine, like, picking on children? Like, you're a fully grown adult. You're the governor of a state. I mean, you basically have like more power than almost anyone in your society, and you're picking on children. You're picking on trans kids. That's just insane. It's really reprehensible.
Yeah, and if I remember right, in the Iowa law, I seem to recall this part where basically it was saying that school staff has, you know, permission to inspect trans kids' bodies, you know, in order to allow them to participate in the sport. And no matter how they inspect those bodies, they can't face any consequences. I'm like, sounds to me like they're just looking for an excuse to sexually abuse children. Mm-hmm. So how they want to accuse trans kids of being predators when it sounds like they're the real predators. They're looking mm-hmm. to abused children.
Yeah. What do you think, Sheila?
Well, a couple of thoughts. One of the things that Putin has said, if he succeeds in conquering Ukraine, is that he's going to go through a kind of an inquisition and try to round up gay, lesbian, trans people, you know, and that these are seen as somewhat enemies of the state. So this idea that gender variant and sexually variant people, this goes back to the 1950s. They used to feel that if you were gay, you were just the sort of person to be a communist. And so the infiltration was at two levels. It was to undermine democracy and turn us all communist. And then it was also to say, and seduce our youth, you know. So this was the other aspect of it. And then there was the thought that there was something basically in those days. I have told this story when I was in a law library one time. I was going through the different legal periodicals, and I was looking for transgender articles, and that I followed them back. And first there were a lot, and then as each year as I went back, they got fewer and fewer. Finally, it said transsexual, see homosexual. Then I went back. Mm-hmm. Homosexual, 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 homosexual. That's lower, lower, lower. Fanny said, homosexual, see sex crimes. And that was the way it was. So in other words, it was saying that trans people and gay people were not only perceived as variant, they were perceived as deviant, and then not only deviant, but criminal. And it could go backwards. And this is why I always like to, whenever we address something problematic like this, I always try to leave a little room for hope. And hope means learning from our elders, learning what they went through. And so this is why GLBT and LGBT history is so important, because this is how people fought back when invisibility was the only option. And sometimes invisibility is a life skill that needs to be brought forward. Sometimes the thought is that we've left those old dark times behind. And I've always been of the mindset that history does sometimes repeat itself, and that some dark forces are never completely laid to rest. And it takes eternal vigilance to keep it from coming back. And one of the things that adversity does is it breeds collectivity. Look at what's going on with Ukraine. The whole world is standing behind Ukraine. And it's wonderful to see how quickly a solidarity movement can emerge almost spontaneously because of a sense of what's right and wrong. And that's what we need for the LGBT people. We've got to not only unite amongst ourselves, but we've got to not lose the techniques of knowing how to disappear and use camouflage when we need to. We have to. Sometimes the thought is the water's fine and there's no sharks out there. And I say, but no, the water isn't always fine. And sometimes there are sharks out there. So sometimes it's good to have some life skills that says, know who to talk to, know who you can trust, and have a little escape route in case you need it, because you might need an escape route. I would say... I would say that the final message would be, one, hope. Don't ever despair, because no matter how, they always say the phrase, it does get better, and it does. It gets better, though, because people develop life skills, because they go through adversity and are not stopped by it. And I think that that's what every generation of LGBT people has learned. They've learned that they have to unite with each other. They have to find friends. They have to find support where they can find it. They have to learn who to trust and who not to trust. They have to try to avoid toxic shame. They have to realize that it's not every issue is a trans issue. Sometimes there's other issues of adapting to whatever life challenges are being thrown at you. Some are educational, some are job related, and there are all these different melanges. But to have gender on top of it is one more thing to deal with in life, and it asks a lot of us, but it can also make us very special people and sometimes very empathetic people, because we know what it's like to be rejected, to be downtrodden, to have people say cruel things, and it makes us better people if we make it.
Well, great. Thank you. So you've been listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. We've been joined tonight with Nicolette, Sheila.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Hi, this is Emma. Thanks so much for listening to our episode of Transpositive today. It is our winter drive, and we're trying to raise $15,000. KBOO is a radio station that really gives voice to folks who don't necessarily fit into normal corporate radio. And we're a radio station that really tries to open our doors to everyone. So if you really value KBOO, and if you value what you hear on KBOO every day, if you would please consider going to kboo.fm/give and click donate in the mobile app, or text KBOO to 44321. Lastly, you can mail a check to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Thanks so much and have a great evening.
Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO radio station is located in Portland, Oregon, in Multnomah County. We honor the indigenous